welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the mystery box of free speech, because you know, never know what's in it. You never know what you're going to hear. But all you know is that we're saying what we think. We're speaking freely. And go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the funds to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Today's Monday. Monday means we've got Mark Collett jumping over the pond. Mark, how are you doing there?
Well, I'm doing okay, thank you. I am doing not bad at all. In fact, Patriotic Alternative, the organisation that I found, has had an absolutely fantastic weekend. We've had activists out in virtually every region of the UK doing a range of different activities, from leafleting to banner drops, from homeless outreach events to camps. We've been very busy, and I think that's a good sign that fundamentally there are lots of people out there who are nationalists. There's lots of like-minded people out there who want to spread the message and do something positive and good for our people. However, as white people in Britain, we are constantly under attack, and we are constantly reminded that fundamentally, we are no longer the majority in this country. That is something that we are reminded of on a daily basis, unfortunately.
Well, you're not.
When I say no longer a majority, we are no longer a majority in several of our larger cities. And there's been some really interesting but extremely worrying demographic data come out over the last few days that has sort of suggested that we are far further down the demographic road to sort of annihilation than we had previously thought.
Well, I checked out baby names. What was I checking out yesterday? Was it baby names in London, and the most popular name was Muhammad? What other?
That's underselling it, Patrick. The most popular baby name, full stop, in the UK is Muhammad. It's not just London. It's in the UK as an actual whole. So we've now got to the point where Muhammad is the de facto most popular baby name, and that should tell you how far along this road we are, how we're getting towards a demographic annihilation. But it's more than that. There was an article, I think it was some point last week, and it revealed that one in three babies, so a third of all babies born in the UK, are born to mothers who were not born in the UK. Mm-hmm. And that's a very frightening statistic. And it's really just the tip of the iceberg. So what they're saying is a third of babies born in the UK are born to mothers who themselves weren't born here. Now, that at first seems very, very worrying, but it gets more worrying when you think about it, because firstly, it doesn't account for babies that were born overseas and have come here with their parents, and secondly, and more crucially, it doesn't account for babies that were born here to non-white parents that were also born here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so when you take,
also, it doesn't account for babies born to white mothers but fathered by non-whites. That's a thing too.
Exactly. And when you take all of this into account, you start looking at a situation where fundamentally you might have somewhere pushing 50% of babies that are born to first generation, second generation immigrants, or to indigenous people, but the baby is of mixed race origin. So at this point, I would say, on a nationwide level, 50% or fewer of babies being born are actually of white British descent. And that is absolutely terrifying. That is absolutely terrifying. And I think the issue that we're seeing here, and what's sort of emerging now in modern Britain, is we can say white Britons still make up, you know, just under 80% of the population, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But we are the aging part of that demographic. So if you were to if you were to look at this as sort of a population pyramid, the lower stratas of the pyramid are the most non-white, and the whiter stratas of the pyramid are the what are the oldest, the top of the pyramid. So obviously you can see this. If you saw this as a wave, it's very clear to see what direction the wave's heading and what that wave is going to bring with it. What you're going to end up with is a situation where in the next, you know, absolutely now, within the next, you know, 30 to 40 years, white people will be a minority as a whole, because the youngest generation, the youngest generations of Britain, of people living in Britain, are now absolutely not white British. White British is a minority in, you know, the younger strata of this demographic pyramid. So as they get older and as they breed and as more immigrants come in, the situation's only going to get worse and worse and worse. And to balance this all out and make it even worse, the government are claiming 1.2 million people came to Britain last year. Now, I dispute that, and I dispute that for good reason. They're saying that 1.2 million people came to Britain last year. But as I said, I'm absolutely disputing that. And I'm disputing that on the grounds that it was 1.2 million visas that were granted by the government, but many, if not the majority of those visas, weren't visas for just single people. They were family visas. They were visas that allowed entire families to travel over. So work visas for people from India will allow not only the worker, but often the entire family to come as well. So, but let's work on the government statistics. 1.2 million people came to Britain last year, and they say that the net migration figures were around 600 to 660,000. So they're saying that roughly, you know, for every 1.2 million people that comes in, 600,000 leave. And at that point, some people might be quite charitable, but very foolish, and say, oh, well, it's not so bad because half of them went back. But half of them didn't go back. When you actually look at the people leaving, a large proportion, if not the majority of people leaving, are, again, elderly, independently wealthy, white Brits, often wealthy white British families, who are leaving to go and live elsewhere in the world. They go to the south of Spain, they go to southern Italy, they go to southern France. They go to find a better life somewhere else, you know, out in the sun, sometimes to the Far East, sometimes to Australia and New Zealand, and they go elsewhere because they don't like living in Britain. They are people that are sick of seeing what's happening and have decided that, hey, we don't want this anymore, we're leaving. Now, that, obviously, is another major problem. Because if you've got 1.2 million people coming in, and they are now, from majority, non-EU backgrounds, so these will be non-white migrants, and at the same time as that 1.2 million's coming in, you've also got a situation where 600,000 are leaving and the majority of them are actually white Brits. This speeds up our demographic replacement in basically two ways. One, because you're seeing the non-whites come in at an unprecedented rate. And two, the people leaving, the people going out of Britain, are normal white Brits who are absolutely sick of what's going on. And then that leads to a situation where, combined with this third of babies born in Britain are born to mothers who themselves weren't born here, and then all of the things that you just raised, sort of mixed race children, children born to non-white parents who were born in Britain, and you can see all of this is converging, it's all speeding up the demographic replacement of white British people. And I think the idea that we're going to be a minority in 2066 is very real. It may well be before. I doubt it would be much long after that. However, the issue is the following. It won't matter whether 2066 is the date where we become a minority. Because of these trends, our fate will be sealed long before that.
Right, right. I mean, when they say demographics is destiny, there's a lot to that. I was talking to a Japanese reporter earlier this summer, and some of the people, you know, Japan has a low birth rate, and some of the politicians are saying, well, yeah, but we've got to do things, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And some of them will raise France or Sweden as models, saying, well, look, the Swedes have a high birth rate, or it's, you know, it's higher. And I was saying, yeah, it's higher, but it's not the Swedes who are having the babies. And as it is right now, one third of the babies born in Sweden are born to either non-Swedes or Swedes, or either to non-Swedes or to people who were born outside of Sweden but are now citizens, whatever, people of immigrant backgrounds. And Sweden was a good example to use for Japan, because Japan, I guess the Tokyo area is already 4% foreign. Japan as a whole is maybe a little under 3% foreign, which isn't, like, that's not overwhelming yet. But Sweden in the 1960s was about 4% foreign. And so you can see that in just you know, a few decades, things can get out of hand. And there's no reason why things couldn't get out of hand in Japan, for instance, even faster than in Sweden. But, you know, one of the, you look at that demographic pyramid, the population pyramid, where they show it's a graphic representation of the population by age. And typically it's the people who are 0 years old are at the bottom and 1 year old are on top of that. And they're represented by bars going across. Sometimes it's one bar for every 5 years of age, sometimes for every 1 year of age, depending on how specific they want to be. And then typically the boys are on the right and the girls are on the left. But I've found some Swedish pyramids where they also distinguish, like, between males who are foreign-born and females who are foreign-born and do that. But what's significant is, you could say, okay, well, the babies might be majority non-white, but the voting population is still overwhelmingly majority white, so we can turn things around. Well, okay, you can turn things around, but before long, it might take 50 years for the voting population to turn majority non-white, but it's only going to take 20 years for the fighting age male population to turn majority non-white. That's going to happen a lot sooner. And, you know, we're already getting that in the United States, because we've had the maternity rooms be non-white for 15 years or so. Now we're at the point where public schools are majority non-white. But, you know, you walk around and the fighting age male population, well, here's the thing. It may still be technically majority white, but then when you look at the whites, what's happened to white men is they're fat, they're feminized, they're disproportionately homosexual and increasingly trannified. When you really examine the numbers, things are really dire, because it's not just that the quantity is going down, but the quality is going down. I mean, the quality of our people is under attack as much as the quantity. What do you think of that, Mark?
I think that's a very important point to raise, and it's a point that I raise. If I've summed it up like this before, my apologies, but this is generally how I put it. I say that our desire to ensure that we remain a supermajority in our own country is not a desire for us to, rot away in privacy. It's not a desire for us to be left alone as we head to the swamps and become something lesser. Our desire to live amongst our own is to foster an environment where we can reach for the stars. It's to foster an environment where we improve ourselves, because we have become a fallen people. And we've become a fallen people in many ways. We've become a fallen people in the sense that we now have embodied every ill, every social malady, every vile, degenerate, hedonistic trend that has been presented to us. We've embodied it, we've taken it on, and we've become lesser people. And if you just look at, say, something like obesity. Now, if you look in the late 1800s at what was called the fat man. Now, the fat man was a large guy, a very large guy who travelled around as part of a freak show. And he was a fat guy that people paid money to see. He was so fat, he ate so much, he was so obese, that people would actually spend money to see him just sat on a chair in a freak show and be like, oh my God, look how big he is. Now, this guy, the fat man, wouldn't be out of place walking around in a supermarket today or sat at an all-you-can-eat buffet. In fact, if you tried to charge people to see the fat man these days, they wouldn't pay money to see it because they see it free everywhere. You know, just take a visit to your local supermarket on a busy day and you might see a dozen people who are the size of that man sat in a freak show that people were paying to see in the late 1800s. Now, that tells you something. It tells you that things that used to be completely unacceptable, that used to be absolute outliers in society to the point where they'd be featured in a freak show, are now, unfortunately, social norms. So, you know, if you were to go to one of these all-you-can-eat buffets, you would see multiple people like that, and they would be eating plates of food that would be so large, so laden with food, that medieval kings would blush if it was presented to them. But that's the norm for these people. And not only are these people grotesquely obese, not only are they gluttonous, not only are they really no use to us in any sense, they're negative on our society, but they also don't work. They are more or less paid to be like that. They are given huge amounts of benefits to sit, eat, be fat, live like slobs. And there's no real penalty to do that. And you see this for a variety of different negative lifestyle choices, which are all just about satisfying one of several, animalistic desires. So some people eat as much as they want. Some people are addicted to, say, sex or pornography. Some people are addicted to just sitting up all night, watching TV shows or playing computer games, and don't want to go out and work during the day, because if they do, they'll be tired when they come to play their computer games the next day. And now, there is really, amongst white people, very few moral duties. You can simply be whatever you want, take on board whatever you want in terms of skewed moral framework, and really just live like a pig. And it's very unfortunate. And you've got now an increasingly smaller number of people who go out, they work, they contribute, they live well, they're trying to keep their head above water. And these people are being sunk, not just by the boatloads of immigrants coming in, but by fallen white people who have become basically just pleasure-fueled cattle that do whatever makes them feel good at any given time without any thought for the consequences. And I've got to say that this push from the media, from the establishment, you know, from Hollywood, to do what makes you feel good without thinking of the consequences, has really gripped the mind, body and soul of our people to the point where our people are now lesser beings. And you look back,
consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. And one of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like The Transgender Industrial Complex, Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more, there's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBNReaders2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBN Readers 2023 at antelopehillpublishing.com.
From the establishment, you know, from Hollywood, to do what makes you feel good without thinking of the consequences has really gripped the mind, body and soul of our people to the point where our people are now lesser beings. And you look back in history and you see the way white people used to be pioneers, explorers, inventors, craftsmen, skilled laborers, people who took pride in themselves, their homes, you know, the work they did. And you see our people now living like, you know, these slovenly beasts. And the worst thing about it then is, you know, the same media that's promoted all this will then take these people and then hold them up on some reality TV show for the whole world to sort of gawp at them and see them as some kind of, you know, slightly different norm. So, you know, yeah, shows like My 600-Pound Life, where fat people just get fatter and fatter, go and see the doctor and try to lose weight, you know, inevitably fail, and that becomes the norm. Well, you know, there are 600-pound people. Well, there shouldn't be. There shouldn't be. And the actual people out there, the white people out there who are decent, hard-working family folk who have a good moral compass, live their lives the way they should, you know, they have their pleasures, but they don't become slaves to their pleasures. They're becoming fewer and fewer and fewer. So the quality we have left to turn around this demographic nightmare is, it's not great, is it? And that's one of the problems. So it's not just that we are fewer in number when it comes to fighting back, but we are actually
lower in quality too. And that creates a problem which fundamentally hampers us. So, you know, there's less of us, and those that are there aren't able to do what's necessary. And you just feel that our people are sort of being caught in this death spiral. And it makes me wonder, what were the last days of Rome like? What were the last days of other civilizations like as they slowly or rapidly spiraled towards their demise? What parallels were they? What can we learn from them? Would there have been a way to turn around ancient Rome? Could ancient Rome have been saved? Could the Roman Empire have survived? Or once it was in decline, was it inevitable that it collapsed and became, you know, confined to history books? Is our collapse inevitable? Are we living in a world where there are an endless series of cycles, where empires rise, empires fall, and we are just on the descent, and there's very little we can do about this because it's nature's way? I don't know. There's a lot of things there. But what's your thoughts? Or am I just talking total nonsense?
So I'm going to go in reverse order regarding the Roman Empire. David Duke, in My Awakening, he theorized that Rome, the downfall of Rome was caused by its conquering and absorbing so many non-Roman people that it got all multicultural, and eventually what had made Rome great in the first place, which were the people of Rome, people of that central area of the Italian peninsula, they just conquered and incorporated so many people that it led to their downfall. He also used as an, and you know, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but it's an interesting idea. He also brought up the Aryans who had gone south into India, and they conquered, but then they absorbed. And you know, the people they absorbed were the people who had built a civilization before, the Indus River. What was it? The Indus River civilization, Indus River Valley civilization. They had a civilization, but those were the dark people of India. But the Aryans who had the wheel and a lot of other things went south. They conquered, but for the first few centuries of conquering, they absorbed the genes of these people. They took the women. That's what they did, is they took the women and they absorbed the genes. And you know, you'll see the genetic research, you can see that even the light skinned people of northern India tend to have about 30% Dravidian ancestry, and it's mostly on the maternal line. And when you go south, even the darkest people in southern India have maybe up to 30% Aryan ancestry, but it's on the paternal line. And was that why India got stuck in, I guess, what Karl Marx termed the Asiatic mode of development? I don't know. But so there's that. One of the things I like to do, this getting back to our fat Americans and fat Britons and whatnot, is look at 100-year-old plus videos on YouTube, because you can find these street scene videos. There were people in the early days of motion photography who would set up a camera on the boardwalk in Coney Island, or on, what would it be, Market Street in San Francisco, or State Street in Chicago, and just film street scenes. And you see people, and there are two things that are always remarkable to me. One is so few fat people. There's so few fat people. And you see this on the boardwalk. You see it in, you know, they have the boardwalk in Atlantic City. You see people on...
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
And you see people, and there are two things that are always remarkable to me. One is so few fat people. There's so few fat people. And you see this on the boardwalk. You see it in, you know, they have the boardwalk in Atlantic City. You see people on the beach, and you're just not seeing fat people. They might be wearing big swimming suits that cover most of their body, but they're not fat. And hardly ever see fat people. And then also that people are well-dressed. They're not walking around like slobs. They're not in their pajamas. Last thing, I don't know if you've ever heard of the book series Nancy Drew. Have you ever heard of Nancy Drew?
I have, yes, but I'm not sort of au fait with it. I don't know what it's about.
Well, you might want to look into it in a few years when Sophia's big enough, when she is old enough to enjoy these stories. It was a series of detective novels for children, young adolescents. They're not particularly sophisticated. They started being written in the late 1920s, and I guess they were still being written into the 1950s. And so it's a slice of America, and it's a white slice of America. It's very white. Occasionally there might be a character who's Chinese or black, but it's very rare. And it's the adventures of Nancy, who is a girl detective. She's about 19 or so. So she's done with high school. She's not a high school student, but she's not in college. She's not married. She's 19, which I guess is okay when you're 19. And she's got two friends, George and Beth. Now, George is depicted as being boyish, a little tomboy, a little bit of a tomboy, which means she's got short hair. Beth is, or Elizabeth, I guess her name's Beth. Beth is always called chubby, right? She's called chubby. But in the illustrations, she's not particularly chubby. You know, it's just something that she likes to eat a little bit and she worries about her weight a little bit or doesn't worry about her weight enough. But even in the depictions, the illustrated depictions of her, she's not particularly chubby. So even just slightly overweight was considered chubby back then. It's not fat. So, I mean, it just shows complete different standards. And they did have standards back then. You know, maybe there are things that weren't great. George was boyish, but she wasn't a lesbian. She wasn't a lesbian. There were these three college boys who were interested in the girls, and for you know, every now and then they would be included in an adventure, but they weren't sleeping with the girls. it's all very different. And you know, I recommend reading it to your daughter when she's of the right age. But
the words you're looking for is innocent. These things were innocent. They were good, clean, wholesome fun, and they were innocent. What we have now is a complete loss of innocence, where everything has to be smutty, everything has to be, everything, there has to be an agenda written into everything. Nothing can just be sort of good, wholesome, clean fun. That, the time of good, wholesome, clean fun has long gone. And that's a very sad thing to say, because fundamentally, children now, rather than having, you know, good, honest, you know, clean fun, have to be almost, you know, and this is almost like state mandated, but they have to be sort of immersed in absolute filth at any given time. And you see this, you know, in cartoons, you see this in books, you see this in, you know, in theatre and obviously, you know, movies. And it's very, very sad, because now things that we sort of enjoyed and are seen as either, initially they were seen as uncool, but now they're sort of old fashioned. Well, actually, no, then first it was uncool, then it was just sort of, oh, that's old fashioned. But now, if you were to, you know, suggest those books to people, that would be seen as hateful. It'd be seen as sort of almost evil. You know, it'd be evil to suggest a book like that. Oh gosh, you're not suggesting a book like Nancy Drew for children. Oh my God, they're so out of date. They're so hurtful. But all of the things pushed in these books were actually very, very important, because all of them instilled a moral framework and societal norms within people. So there was gentle reminders, you don't want to be fat. It's the same in the Noddy books. I read my daughter the original Enid Blyton Noddy books, and in the original Noddy books, there are always bits about fat people, about why you don't want to be fat, about how fundamentally being fat is a bad thing, how if you eat too many of those cakes, little Noddy, you'll be as fat as butter. And all of this is in there for a reason. It's in there because children were taught in one way or another that being fat was a negative, that it wasn't a good thing, that it was actually, you know, a bad thing to be fat. You didn't want to be the fat little boy or the fat little girl. That was bad. It was bad for your health. You looked bad. You would be less fit. You would be less able. And all of these things were reinforced for good reason. So you had a society that instilled in the youngest people within that society a set of guidelines for life, which would keep those people on the straight and narrow. It would keep them healthy in mind and body. It would keep them, you know, spiritually healthy. And now the opposite is true. All of those moral guidestones have been torn up and smashed. And in many ways, they have been, you know, mocked, ridiculed, and now turned into taboos, essentially. Whilst everything bad and evil is promoted as freedom of choice, as some form of liberation, which it's not. So, you know, when you get to £600 and you can just about waddle to the local shop to buy a load more potato chips, snacks, chocolate, that's not liberation. You are not liberated. You know, as much as the media wants to tell people that this, you know, body positivity is liberating for young women because they don't have to live under these constraints, they don't have to live under this body fascism where they have to appeal to men and conform to societal norms. No, it's not liberation. Once you're addicted to that rubbishy food, once you're addicted to eating like a pig, you are not liberated in the slightest. In fact, you are a slave to food. You are a slave to your cravings. You are a slave to your gluttonous desires. And in a very real sense, you are a slave to the companies that churn out this endless processed slop, which is highly addictive. And I find that the things that we are told are liberating are not. You are liberated when you are not addicted. You are liberated when you are in control of your own desires, because then you have the liberty to do what you wish. You have liberty to take numerous options in life. When you're £600 and you can't get into a car or a normal car and you struggle going up and down the stairs and you can barely sit on the toilet and you have to have a special bed and you have to be weighed in a special, you know, depot somewhere and you're not mobile, that's not liberation. You are enslaved. But it's amazing to think the way our enemies have enslaved us and ruined us, they've always done it in the same way. They've always sold slavery to us under the guise of liberation.
That's a very interesting point. And, you know, we started hearing liberation in the 1960s. It was Women's Lib, and then what else did you have? Was Women's Lib the first one? I mean, you had the Civil Rights Movement, and then the Women's Liberation Movement, and I guess you had the gay rights, or did they call it gay liberation? But yeah, liberation is supposed to mean you're being freed. But, you know, what do we have? Like, I was visiting a friend over the weekend. And the friend's mother is still, you know, she's in mid-80s and sits in front of the TV all day. And according to my friend, she's depressed. Why wouldn't she be? She just sits in front of the TV all day. She's always in front of a TV that's on. And she's a woman who has a PhD in something, probably social work or something like that. But I know she's a feminist. She was one of the first wave feminists. Is that what they called them? And, you know, what did it get her in life? It got her a divorce. It got her a very depressed, older age. It got her a twice divorced daughter. You know, I don't know. Are Muslim women, are they as susceptible to divorce? I really don't know, but.
No, they're not. They're not.
But the thing is, you've got these feminists, thanks to feminism, you've got so many women who have been divorced or don't have kids in the first place. And then with the white birth rate so low, what happens? Well, you get these non-whites come in. So you get these people from non-feminist backgrounds. From Muslim or Latin American backgrounds, non-feminist backgrounds, come in. So so what you're seeing with feminism is the feminist societies, the women are, as far as breeders, are being replaced by non-feminist women from foreign countries. So is that a victory? Is that a victory for feminism?
Well, this is why I use the term white genocide, and I don't use that term lightly. I use the term white genocide because genocide is when a group of people are being you know, reduced in, you know, they are being destroyed in whole or in part. Yeah. And that is imposed on them by the conditions under which they live. And we live under conditions which constantly reduce our birth rate and reduce our ability to breed and our desire to breed. So obesity, feminism, women in the workplace. And then when we do breed less, when we are having less children, the same people who told us that our women should go out to work, that we should have fewer children, that we should go out and have fun, that we should get fat, that we should, you know, young men should have vasectomies and just screw everything that moves. The same people that told us that then say, oh, well, we're not having enough babies. So fundamentally, we've got to ensure that lots of people come here from all over the world. And when they do come here, they need to bring their wives. Their wives need to be traditional. And they need to breed at an alarming rate. Because if they don't, who's going to pay for our pensions? Who's going to keep contributing tax funds when you're old? And at that point, none of this feels like an accident. Because it's not an accident. It's not an accident at all. None of this feels like an accident. Because it's all been planned. We are being reduced to a minority. And at the same time that we are having our birth rate curbed, people are brought here to replace us who have the highest birth rate. So you have people from the Indian subcontinent, you have people from the Middle East, you have people from Africa. We will breed more rapidly than any other racial group. But the same pressures aren't put on them to stop breeding. The same pressures are not put on Muslim women to go out into the workplace. In fact, they are largely left alone to have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 children and to live traditional lives. And that is why this isn't a series of unfortunate accidents that has led us to this racial annihilation. It's a series of malicious plots which intertwined have brought about our genocide.
Yeah, and the one caveat I might raise is, you know, sometimes you have something that might seem very, very much like a master plan, like a spider web. Spiders barely have brains, but they do weave intricate webs. You know, and you could argue about whether it's planned or not, but it's just what they do. And I don't know if there was a master plan for this or if it's just that, and I'll say Jews, being paranoid and thinking that if they're not on top of society, if they don't dominate society, they're going to get holocausted. And so they don't even necessarily need a master plan, but they almost instinctively do what they perceive as being good for the Jews. And because they see themselves as a role in general and as being in an adversarial relationship with the host population, with the white European Christian population, they see what's bad for the Western European, or for the Europeans, for the white people, as being good for the Jews. And so they don't even need to have a grand master plan. What they do is going to wind up leading to what we're calling white genocide, regardless of whether it was planned or not. That's the only thing I'd add to that.
You see, I find this a very, very interesting argument. The one you're making, I find very, very interesting. And I find it interesting for a couple of reasons. There is this sort of school of thought that Jews fundamentally are doing this because they fear the white man, they fear repercussions, they fear that things have happened in the past that may well happen again. And fundamentally, they are doing this as a sort of, if you like, a defense mechanism, as a way to ensure that they prosper, that they continue to survive. And that's an interesting argument. It's an argument that does hold some form of water. However, and this is the big however, and this is why I somewhat doubt what you've just said, it's because the people they are bringing to the West, especially the Muslim migrants, especially those from the Middle East, I feel will be far, far more hostile to the Jews than white people. And this is the interesting point. We constantly hear about when Muslims take over areas that, you know, Jews move out. You know, this has happened in France.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
Interesting point. We constantly hear about when Muslims take over areas that, you know, Jews move out. You know, this has happened in France, it's happened in parts of London, I'm sure it's happened in Germany as well. And this is something that is not uncommon. So if, and this is a big if, this was being done because they are scared and they are feeling as if, you know, they are going to be hard done to by us. Well, it's an odd plan because, in a sense, they are importing people who would probably be far worse than the average white.
And that's actually part of my point, is it's not a master plan. It's just a series of instinctual things. And, you know, in the short term, mass immigration seems fine. It's if there was a master plan, maybe they would find nicer people to flood the country with. Or if there was a master plan, maybe they would just have a somewhat longer approach and use other tactics other than bringing in Muslims. But anyway.
But could, just one final point on this, though. Often people have plans which they do lay out, but sometimes those plans are short-sighted, and sometimes those plans are motivated by the wrong motivations, which cause people to make mistakes. Not every plan is a good plan. Not every plan is a plan that works out wonderfully for all those involved. And sometimes, I'll give you an example that's very famous. In Australia, they had a problem with a type of bug, I think it was a type of insect, eating sugar cane. I think it was sugar cane anyway. So they brought in cane toads to, you know, to eat this type of bug. And it turned out that the cane toads didn't eat those bugs at all. They ate everything else, basically, but these bugs. And now Australia is overrun with cane toads. Yeah. Now, I don't think the plan was to get rid of the bug. But unfortunately, the plan backfired horribly. And what I'm saying is maybe their plan was such that they didn't really think it through. And maybe it's motivated by a dislike for white people, but without long-term thought of the consequences.
Yeah, it could be. And here's really the main thing, is that whether it's a plan or not, whether it's a plan or just kind of instinct, whether it's was a good plan or a bad plan, really the only way to defeat it is to name the people behind it. And it is Jewish power. It's Jewish power. And until people talk about Jewish power, they're never going to catch the arsonists. They might put out a fire here or there, but the fires will keep coming as long as the arsonist is allowed to roam with impunity. You have to talk about the Jewishness and the Jewish nature of what's going on. And of course, with draconian hate speech laws in so many countries, it's difficult. In America, maybe we still have a little bit of scope for that. But anyway, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always interesting when you jump across the pond and join us.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a great show. I've really enjoyed it. And I look forward to being back same time next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.